This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dha min ba'din, wallahu samiyun 'alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration. Accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing. And when she bore her, she said, My Lord, I have borne a female child, and Allah knew better what she had borne. And the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, O Mary, from where does this come for you? She said, It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
reminder of our morning top stories, dozens more Palestinians, including another journalist, are killed in Israeli new strikes on Gaza as the regime's genocide rages on across the besieged territory. UNICEF says Israel's total blockade of Gaza has deprived over 1 million children of life-saving assistance for more than a month. And the Yemeni army carries out a fresh anti-US operation in the Red Sea, targeting an American aircraft carrier and accompanying warships with missiles and drones. Live from Tehran, I am Bahman Nouri, and this is News. More Palestinians have fallen victim to Israel's air and artillery strikes in Gaza as the regime's genocidal war rages on unabated across the besieged territory. At least 8 civilians, including a journalist, were killed and 20 wounded in Israeli shelling of a tent housing displaced people and a house west of the southern city of Khan Yunus. 2 Palestinians were killed and several others injured in separate strikes in Khan Yunus and Gaza City's Shajaya neighborhood. 2 Israeli drone strikes also targeted a group of people in Shajaya, killing 3 Palestinians. Another drone strike killed 6 Palestinians in Beit Hanun. Israeli forces bombed a group of civilians at the entrance of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospitals in Deir al-Balah, killing a Palestinian man and his son. According to the health ministry, at least 60 Palestinians were killed across Gaza in a matter of 24 hours. The regime resumed its onslaught on Gaza on March 18th, shattering a 2-month ceasefire. The death toll from the Israeli genocide is nearing 50,700, with over 115,200 others injured. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Masab has joined us earlier with the latest updates on renewed Israeli attacks on the blockaded territory. Let's take a listen.
Let me say that a brutal attack took place here in the Deir al-Balah city in the vicinity of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here that targeted a Palestinian civilian alongside his son. And he was, as you know, Salman Abid. And by the way, he's the cousin of our correspondent, Abu Bakr Abid, here. So I would like to seize this opportunity and express my deep condolences to our brother Abu Bakr over this loss of his cousin. In the meantime, when it comes to Gaza City, the Israeli occupation forces continue their brutal and genocidal attacks against Ash-Shajaya neighborhood, whereas the Israeli attacks are still ongoing amid the military operation, which is still taking place there, targeting more Palestinian civilians for the third consecutive day. And those attacks have never ceased for a while. We are talking about more Palestinian civilians are still slaughtered, while the Israeli occupation forces are still expanding their military operation, targeting more neighborhoods and more streets in Ash-Shajaya neighborhood. And in addition to that, several residential buildings were pounded by the Israeli fighter jets over the past couple of hours in Az-Zaytun neighborhood. Needless to mention as well that we are talking about at least 4 Palestinian civilians were slaughtered in Beit Hanun city in the northern Gaza Strip after they were targeted by the Israeli fighter drones. All in all, we can say clearly that the Israeli occupation forces are still intensifying their brutal and deadly attacks against the Palestinian people, while on the ground, the Palestinian people are still devastated with the brutal measures taken by the Israeli occupation forces.
The United Nations Children's Fund has slammed Israel for depriving more than 1 million children in Gaza of life-saving assistance for more than a month. In a statement on the occasion of Palestinian Children's Day, UNICEF said the continued blockade of aid supply to Gaza constitutes a violation of international humanitarian law and has dire consequences for children. It added that continued prevention of aid delivery has exacerbated malnutrition and spread of diseases while increasing child mortality rate in Gaza. UNICEF said there is enough formula milk for only 400 children for a month. It stressed that infant food supplies are being depleted as thousands of aid packages remain stalled behind Gaza's closed crossings. The agency warned that children receiving treatment for malnutrition are at grave risk due to the blockade of Gaza. It said the closure of malnutrition treatment centers since the resumption of the Israeli aggression on March 18th threatens the lives of hundreds of children relying on those centers. A video is circulating online showing Israeli forces firing on a group of Palestinian paramedics in Gaza's southern city of Rafah. The footage was found on the phone of one of the paramedics who works for Gaza's Civil Defense and Palestine Red Crescent Society. The video was filmed on March 23rd. The medics were on a rescue mission in Rafah's Tel Sultan neighborhood when the attack happened. Their ambulances and fire trucks were clearly marked and had their emergency lights on as they came under fire. At least 15 paramedics were killed in the strike. Hamas has strongly condemned the attack, saying the video is proof of yet another war crime in the regime's genocidal campaign against Palestinians. The resistance group said the video captures the deliberate, cold-blooded slaughter of civil defense teams. Hamas said the video is irrefutable visual evidence which exposes Israel's lies, proves the systematic targeting of humanitarian workers, and constitutes premeditated murder under international law. Gaza's civil defense has also called for an international probe into the execution-style killing of the medics and aid workers. The violent Israeli attack on rescue teams in Gaza's Rafah continues to draw condemnations. Palestinian Red Crescent Society spokesperson Nebal Farsak has rejected the regime's narrative and demanded an immediate investigation to ensure justice for the victims.
Although ambulances carried the internationally protected emblem and had their lights turned on, the occupation soldiers deliberately opened fire hysterically on the ambulance team, whose members were also wearing Red Crescent uniforms, and this led to the martyrdom of the teams. This video clearly and openly refutes the story presented by the occupation, which deliberately targets ambulances along with medical and health personnel. The occupation is telling a false story. The occupation has told the world that its forces targeted ambulances that were moving suspiciously without their lights on, and accuses them, as usual, with the same fabricated narrative that they belong to Hamas. This is not the first targeting of the society's teams. 27 members of the Red Crescent Society have been killed by Israeli forces while performing their humanitarian duties and while wearing the Red Crescent badge. Today, we, the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, call on the international community to conduct an immediate and independent investigation that ensures justice for the victims and holds accountable all those involved in this crime.
Israeli settlers have once again taken to the streets of Tel Aviv for another weekly demonstration demanding the release of all of the remaining captives held in Gaza. The protesters called on the cabinet of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to put the captives above other interests. He also urged the regime to stop violating the Gaza ceasefire deal with Hamas. Demonstrators chanted anti-war slogans calling for an immediate end to the Gaza genocide. The new rallies came amid a rise in demonstrations across the occupied territories and increasing discontent with the resumption of Israel's onslaught on Gaza. The regime restarted Gaza attacks after refusing to enter talks on the second phase of the ceasefire deal. Israel sought an extension of the first phase of the deal, but Hamas rejected that as a violation of the original agreement. The movement says it will only release the remaining captives in exchange for the release of more Palestinian prisoners, a permanent ceasefire, and Israel's pullout from Gaza. Tens of thousands of people have staged a demonstration against the costly EU-proposed rearmament plan. They cried out that the rearming Europe will result in painful cuts in social spending and more poverty. This is a new political headache for Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni as she grapples to hold her right-wing coalition government together.
On Saturday, as many as 100,000 people took to the streets of the Italian capital, Rome, to stage a demonstration against the European Commission's proposed costly rearmament plan. The initiative, organized by opposition party Five Star Movement, condemned Italy's Prime Minister Meloni's government and European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen's rearm plan, slamming the two leaders as warmongers.
They have been playing us all along. They told us that we had to defend Ukraine to defend Europe's freedom and territorial integrity. Dear Prime Minister Meloni, when it comes to Gaza, you simply turn away, pretending nothing is going on.
The demonstration was also attended by other opposition parties, including the Green Left Alliance and a delegation from the Democratic Party. Brussels has opted to rearm itself following the recent overwhelming geopolitical challenges. The EU's rearmament plan aims to mobilize around 800 billion euros over the next 4 years, the bulk of which will come from member states increasing their national spending of military equipment.
The European Union is seen as an entity that throughout two decades has largely impoverished the European middle class by adopting oppressive fiscal rules and pro-multinational economic policies. All this, people complain, has led to painful cuts in social spending and investment.
Sicuramente una spesa così grande.
For sure, such a large expense will lead to more cuts to our struggling education and health systems. It's unacceptable.
Non sono I valori a difesa della democrazia.
Europe is no longer defending its democratic principles. The European Commission is rather advocating for private interests, in my opinion.
L'Europa ha perso potere politico.
Europe has lost political significance over the past 20 years. This is because it's been completely subjected to the U.S. influence, supporting NATO's expansion and all regime change operations in West Asia.
Criticism of Rome's demonstration came from Italy's Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani. On Saturday, Tajani said making citizens safer is the Italian government's priority. Max Civili, Rome.
Israeli forces continue their brutal military aggression against the occupied West Bank city of Jenin and its refugee camp, killing more civilians and destroying infrastructure. According to Jenin's media committee, the regime forces fatally shot a newly released Palestinian prisoner as the incursion in Jenin continued for the 75th consecutive day. The regime forces stormed the cities at Dabus and Al-Attari neighborhoods. They also raided Palestinians' homes in the Jenin refugee camp, raising the Israeli flag on the rooftop of the Palestinian house. The number of Palestinians killed in Jenin since the beginning of the Israeli aggression has risen to 38. The regime forces completely destroyed about 600 houses in the Jenin camp, while making over 3,200 housing units uninhabitable. Violent raids by Israeli forces on settlers have significantly increased across the West Bank since the Gaza genocide began, leaving over 940 Palestinians dead so far. Our West Bank correspondent Naka Hamed joined us earlier with the latest updates on Israeli raids across the occupied Palestinian territory. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
Let me start by the breaking news that just came in, that the IOF forces have fired live ammunition upon a group of Palestinian workers to the east of Beit Lahem. Local resources have informed that three among them has been injured, and one of them has been critically injured among that group that has been shot to the east of Beit Lahem. This is something that we are seeing more, happening more, as Palestinian workers go into the apartheid wall towards their work, to their work areas. The IOF immediately shoots live ammunition upon them or detain them and severely beat them until they need hospitalization, as we have seen multiple times in the areas of Tarqumia, in the area now in Beit Lahem, and many times in Azzoun to the north of the West Bank. And speaking of Azzoun, another breaking news from Azzoun to the east of Qalqilia: an armed clash is going on for many hours now. We are talking about for at least the last 3 hours have witnessed incidents inside Azzoun, armed clashes between Palestinians and Israeli forces.
The Yemeni armed forces say they have targeted the U.S. aircraft carrier Harry S. Truman and its accompanying warships in the Red Sea with drones and missiles.
In recent hours, the missile force and drone unit, with support from the naval forces, engaged several U.S. warships in the northern Red Sea, including the U.S. aircraft carrier Truman, using a number of cruise missiles and drones. The hours-long attack operation disrupted the enemy's ability to carry out hostile assaults on our country during the period of the strike. Additionally, the naval forces of the armed forces carried out a military operation targeting the U.S. supply ship accompanying the Truman aircraft carrier with a ballistic missile.
Sari emphasized that Yemen's leadership, people, and armed forces are committed to defending the Palestinian people as a religious, moral, and humanitarian duty. He said operations against Israel and Israeli-related ships will continue until the regime's aggression against Gaza ends and the territory's blockade is lifted. The new operation came after Yemeni forces targeted an Israeli military site in the occupied Palestinian territories using a drone. Additionally, Yemen's air defenses shot down a U.S. reconnaissance drone over Sa'dah province with a domestically produced surface-to-air missile. The United States presses ahead with its aggression against Yemen, launching new airstrikes on various areas across the Arab country. According to Yemeni media, the latest strikes by American warplanes targeted the Hafsin area west of Sada city with four raids. The attacks hit a store selling solar energy panels and a civilian home west of the city. Two civilians have been killed and four others injured in the strikes. Footage of the incident shows civil defense teams carrying out rescue operations and working to extinguish fires caused by the bombings. American warplanes also carried out at least five strikes east of the city of Sada. Kamaran Island in the Hodeidah Governorate in western Yemen was also hit with five airstrikes. The U.S. and its allies have escalated their aggression against Yemen after the country resumed its anti-Israel operations of the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. Most of the U.S. attacks target civilian buildings, causing fatalities and injuries among civilian population. Our correspondent in Sana'a, Yusuf Mari, joined us earlier to bring us up to speed on the latest U.S. strikes on Yemen and the country's response to them.
I think it's sending a clear message to the U.S. and to the Trump administration that has declared goals of eliminating the Yemeni armed forces, eliminating their ability to impose a naval blockade on Israeli shipments, has really failed and failed across the board. You talk about the U.S. economy drastically taking a turn for the worse. Well, when you add to the mix that they've also lost over $1 billion in just 3 weeks of military operations, because the U.S. has failed to achieve any of its military objectives, now they want to go to Plan B. And experts here in Yemen suspect that the U.S. is trying to cause pockets of famine. They're trying to stir the nation into, you know, another humanitarian catastrophe similar to one that was endured here in Yemen from 2015 to 2018 during the Saudi-led coalition. But the Yemeni army and the armed forces, they assure everyone and the world that a humanitarian catastrophe, a deterioration of Yemen's economy and fabric of society will not be denigrated, because they've taken the precautionary measures over the past years to ensure that even if an all-out war was to be directed at Yemen, people will not starve to death.
Protesters have flooded Washington, D.C. and cities across the U.S. in what became the largest single day of protest against U.S. President Donald Trump since his return to office. Demonstrators held signs that read, "Not my president," condemning the president's executive orders, including his attacks on Social Security, harsh trade measures, and alliances with billionaires like Elon Musk. Events have been planned in all 50 states, as well as Canada and Mexico. Pro-Palestine protesters also joining the rallies to slam U.S.'s support for the Israeli regime's renewed genocide in Gaza and the Trump administration's crackdown on campus protests. Meanwhile, rallies are also taking place in Berlin, Paris, London, and Lisbon in support of the nationwide protests in the U.S.
Paris against Trump! Paris against Trump! Paris against Trump!
Hundreds, mostly Americans, are marching on the streets of Europe, voicing concern over the state of democracy in their country. In Paris, expats branded Trump a racist con man, while Berliners slammed Elon Musk's role in slashing government safeguards. Trump was inaugurated for a second time on January 20th. Almost immediately afterwards, he wielded sweeping executive orders to enact a radical conservative vision known as Project 2025, which centralizes authority and dismantles liberal institutions. And that is the end of this news bulletin. Thank you so much for staying with us. Until next time, I'm going to see you in about 35 minutes.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is Arabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. globalmissionradio.ir.
The supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
the limelight.
Donald Trump's tariffs have battered the U.S. stock market and triggered political backlash and widespread consumer concerns. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for the details. Global Times wrote, following the announcement of U.S. President Donald Trump's sweeping new tariffs, U.S. stock markets have been rattled for two consecutive days. Amid widespread opposition, Trump announced a sweeping reciprocal tariff policy recently, setting a baseline tariff of 10% on all imported goods, with higher tariffs on many countries, as reported by U.S. media. U.S. stocks were battered by a steep sell-off recently after China retaliated against the United States for Trump's tariffs, according to CNN. The Dow plunged by 2,231 points, or 5.5%. The broader S&P 500 was 5.97% lower. The tech-heavy Nasdaq Composite was 5.82% lower. The Nasdaq closed in a bear market for the first time since 2022, down more than 20% from its record high in December, according to CNN. According to CNN, the Dow closed in correction down more than 10% from its record high in December. It is the first time the Dow has closed in correction since March 7, 2022, according to Sam Stovall, chief investment strategist at CFRA Research. The Dow posted its biggest back-to-back losses since March 2020. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said recently that Trump's tariff policy will hike prices and slow economic growth, and it is now becoming clear that the tariff increases will be significantly larger than expected. Policy changes implemented by the White House have contributed to a highly uncertain outlook, Powell said, making the remarks as stocks plummeted amid an escalating global trade war, as reported by ABC News. While the Fed has not issued a U.S. recession forecast, Powell noted that outside analysts have increased their recession probabilities. He said, while tariffs are highly likely to generate at least a temporary rise in inflation, it's also possible the effects will be more persistent. Trump is also facing mounting opposition from Republican senators over his sweeping plan to impose steep tariffs on nearly 200 countries, including the U.S. biggest trading partners and allies, according to Newsweek. More than half a dozen Senate Republicans have pushed back on the president's tariffs so far. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas told Fox Business, "Tariffs are a tax on consumers, and I'm not a fan of jacking up taxes on American consumers." Joshua Blank, who runs the Texas Politics Project at the University of Texas in Austin, told Newsweek that the state will likely feel more pain than most other states as a result of Trump's tariffs because of the critical role that foreign trade plays in its economy. Following the sweeping tariffs on imported goods, Americans have been also busy adding to cart, according to a report by the Wall Street Journal. A 22-year-old public policy major at Southern Methodist University said that the tariff news has been the talk of the campus, especially for its potential impact on food prices. that she and her friends have been watching the stock market and worrying about the economy they're set to graduate into. Economists said tariffs will likely raise prices consumers pay for produce, clothing, electronics, cars, and many other goods, according to Wall Street Journal. U.S. billionaire Mark Cuban also took to the social media platform Blue Sky to remind his followers that it's time to start stocking up recently. He said, "It's not a bad idea to go to the local Walmart or big box retailer and buy a lot of consumables now, from toothpaste to soap. Anything you can find storage space for, buy before they have to replenish inventory." Cuban said in the post, "Even if it's made in the United States of America, they will jack up the price and blame it on tariffs." At supermarkets and electronics stores, some customers seem to be heeding Cuban's advice, lugging packed carts through parking lots, according to Wall Street Journal. Others went about their day-to-day shopping, saying they would deal with price increases if and when they started showing up on the shelves.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Welcome to Women of Resistance. Every day we are met with a new heartbreak and horrors, says the engineer from Gaza, Sabreen Shabbat. But we remind ourselves that to remain steadfast because we are Palestinians, she adds. Here is a story of a woman who is keen to speak for all women of Gaza.
Sabreen's story isn't just her own. It is the story of all Palestinian women. Not showing her full identity is her way of telling the world she's a faceless face of all Gazan women who've experienced genocide. It's the story of a thousand like her, family-focused, fierce of spirit and of intellect. Sabreen may choose to screen her face, but the full glare of her experience living under tyranny has been exposed for all to see. In what has become something of a theme, Gaza's women are some of the most educated, a feat even more impressive for the obstacles endured just to have the right to learn. Sabreen's hard work was paying off. Despite the challenges, she had ambitions to go further, for more. Life in a genocide is a new kind of horror. Survival is simply the beginning of a nightmarish hellscape. The world's failings on Palestine have been noted, most solemnly by the Palestinians who found themselves living under a genocide as life carried on as normal elsewhere. The act of constant displacement, of leaving everything behind in an attempt to escape with your life, takes a heavy toll. The thing they probably don't tell you about living under the shadow of munitions exploding, bodies being broken, a genocide as your shadow, is how your spirit is beaten, even if your body defies the odds and remains intact. The latest round of Israeli aggression has not just robbed Palestinians of the here and now, but by reducing their lives to the most base elements of survival, Palestinians are robbed of a future filled with hopes and dreams. The trauma experienced by those who survived the genocide will require generations to unpack. Mothers, sisters, daughters, sons have all lived through months upon months of a Western-created tragedy one would not wish on their enemies, except perhaps the ones created for political expediency. Sabrine has seen the worst, but strives to live to honor those who are not as fortunate. Sabrine wants us to embrace the things we hold most dear, create memories. Tomorrow isn't guaranteed, but as long as there's life, there must be hope.
Joining me in the studio today to discuss Sabrine's story is Fatima Hilo. She's a British Palestinian filmmaker. Welcome, Fatima. Fatima, this Sabrine talks about the hope and the strength she has, which we've seen in a lot of Palestinians, and to stay steadfast on the path of resistance. But she equates this to her identity as a Palestinian. Now, you as a Palestinian yourself, can you explain this spirit to us?
Well, I share this identity simply because I am also Palestinian, as you've said, and I'm from there. And Mahmoud Darwish, the Palestinian poet, said, "I come from there. I have a home, I have a window, and a prison." So that is, this is the beautiful and the powerful reflection on identity. Palestinian identity, like any other, is a combination of history, culture, traditional, and the shared experience of a people. But what makes it especially striking is that it has continuously threatened by, displacement, occupation, and attempts to erase it. Yet, despite this, Palestinians have held onto their identity with remarkable strength. It is the embroidery, the embroidered dresses, what every stitch tells the story of a village or a city, carrying the heritage of generations. It is the kufiya, not just a scarf, but a symbol of the resistance, which you are talking about, the struggle unity.
Do you feel that the fact that, there is this fight for survival specifically?
Definitely.
That is what makes you more strong?
Definitely. Palestinian identity is not just about culture and aggression and expression thought. It is also deeply tied in the land, to the names of villages, the streets, the olive trees, the stood fasting for the centuries. They've been struggling, and this is the oral history passed down from elders who remember what once was, and even for those exile, it carried in memory, it carried in language, in belonging for the return. The Sabrine's strengths like that of so many Palestinians comes from this deep rooted identity. It is an identity that has been shaped by the struggle, mm-hmm. but also by an unbreakable connection to heritage, to history, and hope. And that's why, no matter, you know, how much hardship they face, Palestinians continue to hold into their traditions, because identity is not just because it's about, you know, past, but also about the future, mm-hmm. and the determine of to, and they determine to protect it.
Absolutely. How much of a faith do you think plays a role here? Because do you think that it is the fact, like, you know, when I struggle to see what is going on in Palestine right mm-hmm. now, you know, with the tragedy we see happening, is the way I see it is that, you know, we are all transitional into this world. We only have to think about our role and, you know, what we can do, what are we supposed to do, what really eventually happens and the solution is found, we leave it upon God. You know, do you think this belief in God is probably what also helps in this fighting spirit, in this resilience?
It's more about the strength, you know, like, you know, absolutely, you're right. Sabrine's pain is not just her own. It is reflection of a much, you know, larger struggle, one that history has shown can repeat itself, and in if injustice, you know, going on and, you know, left unchecked, for instance. And today it's Gaza. Tomorrow it could be anywhere. It could be, you know, when war turns it, a blind eyes to yeah. oppression, it sets a dangerous precedent, you
Absolutely.
Know, that
yeah.
allows inhumanity
yeah.
to spread. And the loss of innocent lives, children, doctors, youth, people, engineers, like, you know, like Sabrine, is not just a loss for Palestine, but for humanity, for as a whole. You know, these are not the people who shape the future.
Absolutely.
And
we're going to come back to that, Fatima, just to remind our viewers, you are watching Women of Resistance, where we highlight the plight of women who were subjected to a genocide in Gaza. Let's move to a more personal story of yours, Fatima. You are a Palestinian. Mm-hmm. Every Palestinian has got their own story, you know. Tell us about your Palestinian story and the work you do.
Well, I'm a filmmaker. I'm a Palestinian of origin and British citizen. I'm a filmmaker. I'm an activist. I am a survivor. I am, you name it, you know, a journalist. And I've been through all what Sabrine's actually been through. I was born and grew up in exile in the refugee camp, the infamous refugee camp in Lebanon called Sabra and Shatila. I witnessed the massacre that happened in September 1982 there. I lost part of my family in the camp. I was forced when I was a child to walk on the dead bodies, you know, when I was, you know, very young, to see all of this atrocity, and forced and used as a human shield, you know, in the camp in order the Israelis to get into the camp. However, that did not stop me. The same as Sabrine said, this is not like going to hold us, but it's going to encourage us. It may, you know, delay us to achieve our hope and our dream, but still, actually, we will do it. Sabrine's case, she went to the university after 18 years of, you know, of staying, you know, looking after her family.
Yeah.
This is amazing, you know. She kept this dream, she kept this mm-hmm. resistance and strength, and that where every Palestinian has this encouragement, because mm-hmm. we need to create our future. We need to reach our dream, and that's what it is.
Fatima, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm wondering, it's amazing, and we have seen this repeatedly, mm-hmm. this resilience and strength, you know. But sometimes when you've been through, for example, what you say about, you know, walking over dead bodies, this breaks the strongest of people. Sometimes, you know, mental health issues, it stops you from, you know, achieving more. But we don't see that in you, Palestinians. We just see it fueling more and more, you know, spirit of resistance. How do you do it?
We do it actually because we don't have, when you are in this situation, you don't have time to think about it. You need to do it. You need to go for it. You need to keep going. Otherwise, it's gonna break you. And that's why the strength, the commitment, you know, the belief, the resistance is our weapon to keep going on and to keep our life live, basically, to continue and to go forward and look for the future. It held you back. Yes, to get your dream, but that does not stop you. You know, it keeps you going. Otherwise, it will break you.
Because there is no other option than to fight for the freedom of Palestine.
There is no other option,
yeah.
And you have to be unbreakable. Yeah. That is the issue. That's the most important for us.
Absolutely. How do we help, you know, like women who are in Gaza at the moment in the condition of Sabrine, for example? We see that, for example, she's got this GoFundMe, account, but she's saying it's not doing too well. People are not really donating money. But you see a lot of, you know, people want to help out. Do you think it's the trust factor of donating online? What really is it?
Well, it's quite a lot of combination. First of all is, you know, the holding of the, you know, the power of the occupation is affecting the contribution for the people and the mistrust. Of course, sometimes they try to break you. They try not to allow you to get any fund. But also, it's not just this. It's about women need support, especially the Palestinians. Through organization, they need a contribute organization that dedicate to aiding Palestinian women, not just, you know, keeping them struggling and struggling and going on like that. Yeah. You need a plan for this, and you need an organization, an institution that can adopt these people, like Sabrine, like me, because we are struggling even to do some films nowadays because of the lack of fund, the lack of credibility and trust. We need advocate. We need education for girls and women as well in our
Absolutely.
Culture and our community.
Yeah.
The problem is we have a lot of, as I said, a lot of preventing us. Some of them is like, you know, amplifying, like, you know, we need amplifying the voice of women as well.
Absolutely.
This is very important.
Yeah.
But also bear in mind, occupation is making it really difficult as well.
Yes.
I'm going to give an example about a lady who was, you know, recently killed in her house in France. She's a journalist. She's a filmmaker. She was doing a film, documentary film about Gaza recently. Her name is Marine Fedhovich. And she was found in her house.
Absolutely.
Sorry,
I mean, Fatima, the struggles of the Palestinian women are manifold. There is threats everywhere. But honestly, I have to end this by saying to you, you know, hats off to you, women of Palestine.
Thank you.
And on that, thank you so much for joining us. We leave you with the sounds of Palestine by the artist Saif. Goodbye.
RIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints with me, Atta, the host of this program. Within the studio are two special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Noor Muhammad. Sheikh Noor Muhammad, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum to you.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, there are so many questions and doubts about the concept of hijab, especially for the ladies. So what is the perfect form of hijab, and is covering the hair part of the hijab for women or not? Sheikh Noor Muhammad, let's start with you, brother. How does Islam introduce hijab for women for us? I mean, is there any clear picture given to us about the concept of hijab according to the Quran and the Hadith and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt or not?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Obviously, yes. We have at least two verses in the Noble Quran explicitly. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talking about the concept of hijab. And I'm really wondering that many people maybe they are not aware of these two verses, at least these two verses of Noble Quran, mm-hmm. in, you know, chapter Ahzab and chapter Nur. And they are arguing about the actually the concept of hijab. Inshallah, I will talk about these beautiful verses of Noble Quran.
That's right.
But prior to that, let me talk about a bit about the philosophy of hijab. Why this actually concept is important in Islamic law.
That's right.
You know that I think obviously nowadays, I think it's very clear that's why hijab is important in Islam. Mm-hmm. It's part of the Islamic laws. You know that in Islamic perspective, women cannot be considered as a sexual puppet.
Okay.
Or you may call it a sexual toy. Actually, woman has her own
dignity and honor,
dignity and personality, and Islam wanted to maintain this dignity.
That's right.
This is very important.
This is called we can say the objectification process,
exactly.
Or we can say commodification of the women. That's
if you look at the social media, you know, in any propaganda, unfortunately, in some propaganda, you find that they have been used the women as a tools, mm-hmm. as sexual tools, in order to sell some kind of products.
All right.
Islam wanted to ban this, you know, phenomenon. Wanted to give some kind of dignity and personality for the woman. When you talk to the woman, you should respect her. This is part of the, woman's rights.
Mm-hmm.
I think hijab is woman's rights.
That's right.
They have to maintain their personality, their dignity. And when you talk, you have to respect her. Okay, look at her personality, not look at her beauty only.
Okay.
This is very important.
So if we consider hijab as the women's rights on that time, nobody is allowed to violate such a rights, we can say. And if a person, I mean a lady herself, does not observe hijab, it means that she herself is violating the right, her own rights, isn't it?
Exactly. Okay. I don't know why some people, they want to talk in this very negatively about the concept of hijab.
Okay.
I'll talk about this issue more.
So in different cultures all around the world, we could see different forms of hijab for the ladies. But the major question is that, is covering the hair an obligatory part of hijab for the ladies according to Islam or not, Shaykh?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, of course, absolutely. This is the part of the hijab that is, there is a consensus among all the different schools of Islam and sects of Islam that hair must be covered. Because in the Holy Quran, Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in the verse number 24, ayah number 31, says that, and tell the believing women to lower their gaze and guard their chastity and not to reveal their adornments except what normally appears. Let them draw their veils over their chests.
Uh-huh.
From this part that
so
Yudnina alayhin,
the chest, it means from head to chest,
yeah, exactly.
Isn't it?
Okay. Yeah. From this part, Yudnina alayhinna min jalabibihinna, which says that draw their veils over their chests.
All right.
Indicates that this hair scarf or khimar must cover the hair, neck, and bosom.
That's right.
So this is what all Muslim sects among Sunnis and Shias all agree that this kind of hijab must be observed by the Muslim ladies and women.
And according to Arabic fiqh al-lugha, khimar is not a thin type of cloth.
Yes.
It's a kind of thick one, the other part of which cannot be seen easily.
Yeah, because there are some technical terms in the whole of Quran. Right. One is, for example, khimar. Khimar is a headscarf that covers the head, neck, and and chest.
Yes.
And then jilbab. Jilbab is a kind of loose outer garment covering the entire body.
So it's not tight.
It's the entire body.
That's right, okay.
And also we have abaya or chador that is, or even according to some of the sects, niqab. That should, a full-length kind of cloak.
Yes.
So these are the things that it should covers cover all the entire body, except those part of the body, like face and hand,
right,
that normally appears. So from these things, we understand that in hijab, when we observe hijab, we should cover our hair for the ladies.
The Western thinkers and the liberal capital world says that hijab is a type of limitation for the women. You are limiting the freedom of ladies. How do you answer this question, Sheikh Nur Muhammad?
I think those people who actually use, as I said, women, you know, as a sexual toy, they are limiting the woman, not the, you know, or any concept of the hijab.
Okay.
You know that actually, let me mention one point. We have different cultures.
Yes.
Okay. We are not talking about the cultures. Maybe in Indian culture, I don't know, in Pakistani culture, many other in different countries, they have their own covering. But what matters is to have the kind of Islamic covering, as my brother mentioned, in the at least two verses of Noble Quran, we have the concept of hijab or concept of kind of covering for the woman. But it can be different in different cultures.
Right.
Okay, we do not want to focus on, for example, one culture, Iranian culture, or for example, different cultures of hijab. But after all, what is obligatory for women not to attract the sexual attention of the opposite gender?
Right.
This is very important. Not to walk in a way or cover in a way that attracts the attention.
That's right.
You know, it's some kind of nudity, you know.
Right.
It attracts the attention of the opposite gender.
Okay.
And it's kind of the lost culture.
That's right.
You know, this is important in Islam.
Unfortunately, the concept of hijab and covering itself somehow is deviated. I mean,
yeah, it's possible.
This hijab style or something like that. The ladies who we can see are in photo shoots or something like that with hijab.
Yeah.
We can see lots of cosmetics and the makeup on the face. And with hijab,
we can say,
again, they could see that. This is the kind of tabarruj, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
I mean, that a person might be showing off, a lady especially, through hijab. This is, again, a big sin, Sheikh.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. I'm talking this point. And, you know, what matters is to not to attract the attention of the opposite gender. Actually, the concept of hijab is for the serenity of woman, you know, to have the very beautiful, I don't know, a very lovely, you know, family.
That's right.
To enjoy being with other people, you know, talk to the with other people.
Okay.
You to maintain your family.
That's right.
It is very important.
All right.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
As most of the converts to Islam, especially the ladies, observe hijab to the full extent. I mean, if you look at those ladies who convert from the non-Islamic world to the Islamic one, their hijab is really complete and beautiful. I mean, and when you ask them why hijab in this form, they say because it gives you a kind of honor and it's kind of, we can say, dignity and respect. I mean, and the men, especially in the Western world, cannot get close to you as near, as private as they were before. So all in all, hijab is a kind of protection for the women and not a kind of limitation. But Sheikh Rouhani, Is it possible that hijab be considered as a limit for some ladies when they are in the society? Is it good or bad? I mean, because nowadays in the modern world, the ladies are an inevitable part of a society. So can hijab really ban them from presence in some parts of the society?
Of course not. You know, when we talk about hijab, observing hijab, Islam is a religion of fitra or nature, because we believe that Islamic teachings and doctrines and rulings are completely com-